the Tinium, and I'll touch on that as well, because it's kind of an unexpected finding. And another researcher did the environmental assessment. I was told we just need to wait because it's the new version of the Microsoft Office. Okay. It's not coming, huh?
Yeah.
It is coming. Okay. So let me just be careful here while we click. And so Christina Mena is her name, and she did all the, under her supervision, somebody did all the coliform counting. And Mel Ortiz is our biostatistician. Casey was the student I was telling you about. Then some of our aliquots traveled to Texas Tech. That's in Lubbock, Texas, in the Panhandle region. And here, Dr. Eswaran, who is originally from Kerala, he is a specialist in amoeba, and he did a PCR for that, supervising Sri Tulasi Kari. Jack Bristol and Lillian Mayberry are, you know, senior professors, and they did all the flotation. Ines Ortega is a specialist in cyclospora. And David Graham is my mentor. It's a Baylor College of Medicine. He's a specialist in Helicobacter pylori. Armando Campos is with the Mexican Institute of Social Security. So there's been an excess of documented excess of reportable diseases in counties that border Mexico. So it is believed that there is an overflow of infectious diseases coming to the U.S. from Mexico. And that was the reason there was this Pan American Health Organization office established in El Paso, what is it, 60 years ago. And probably the existence of BITS and other things that are taking place in the U.S.-Mexico border. So what I wanted to do is, I just did the analysis, somebody did the study in the biosolid waste of a project they were doing with the urine-diverting latrines in Mexico in some colonias. And all the time I said, well, okay, but these are the people who live like in the edges of town, like shanty towns. They don't represent Juarez. So let's do a population-based survey. In that small survey, 82% and 70% of the, you know, the soil recovered from those latrines had Giardia and Crypto, respectively. And there is a lot of studies looking at what is the prevalence of these pathogens, you know, in the population level. So that's what I wanted to do. And, oops, I think I skipped one. Well, the objective was, first, the prevalence, and second, find out if there was, just using a snapshot of levels of domestic contamination, thank you, levels of fecal contamination in the household from kitchen surfaces and from the hands of the meal preparers, where there was a relationship. So it was a long shot, but that's what I tried to do. And study other risk factors. We got the IRB approval, and the study population was a people who were living in homes, right? So we didn't sample people who were in institutions, such as hospitals and jails. So of the population of both sides of the border, everybody, there was an exclusion by age or gender, and we did those who are familiar with, like, the vaccination cluster sampling scheme of 30 clusters, 30 in each side of the border. And the idea was to get, you know, probably a sample size of about more than 100 households. And that was the goal. And there was, of course, informed consent and child assent, because we were going parental assent as well for minors. There was an interview, there was a swabbing. We obtained a sample of drinking water. Sometimes, we ask, what kind of water do you drink? And people will show us a container inside the fridge. So that was what we collected as well. We collected, provided a stool collection kits, and we store the samples in coolers, and usually was the fresh morning samples, and they were processed the same day. We had to, you know, cross them in one single day before two to El Paso. So that's possible because they are contiguous cities. But it was a nightmare from the point of view of the logistics. The laboratory studies are mentioned there. There are, you know, swabbing to get the total and fecal coliform counts, drinking water, total coliform and E. coli using commercially available kits. Stools, we use, we separate them, and then all of those who I was telling you exactly where we did it. This is the results. We had about 100 households in each side of the border. 104 in El Paso and 95 in Ciudad Juarez. What happened is that in fewer samples in Juarez, we obtained more fecal samples. So we say, okay, this is all we can manage. And there were data on 757 individuals. I will present data on fewer because it's based on stool samples collected. But these are the weighted prevalence of these pathogens, and these are the main results. People say when, you know, I've been trying to get this published, oh, it's very descriptive. Yeah, you bet it's descriptive. Find somebody who has described this before. This is to say that, you know, it was kind of a, oh, my friends in parasitology say, oh, it doesn't look like there is a lot of parasites. The main one is the one I'm working on, which is, well, it's not a parasite. It was a microbe that has a long, you know, duration of infection. It's lifelong. So that's why you have like 30% of H. pylori. Tinea, that was surprising, 3.3%. We weren't expecting to find that many. And Giardia, very little. Crypto, you know, is in the border of saying is non-significant. Histolytica only in Tamiva dispar, Ascaris less than 1%, Nicator americanus less than 1%. No Cyclospora, and of course Ines Ortega from Georgia was saying, oh no, you didn't do it right. But that was the result. No, all the samples were clean for that. This is the prevalence of H. pylori by age. It's consistent with other surveys we have done. I don't have an explanation why it kind of dips at the end. Doesn't keep climbing by age. This is pulling the data from both El Paso and Chihuahua. And since then, I have done larger studies in children, and it's about right that 0 to 7 is that level of prevalence. We found differences for very few differences across the U.S.-Mexico border. And surprisingly, there were more tinea in El Paso than in Ciudad Juarez. The prevalence in El Paso was 9% compared to 1.1% in Ciudad Juarez. And those are the numbers. It's based on few observations, like 12. All crypto, dispar, Ascaris lumbricoides, Necator americanus, the hookworm, were found in Mexico, but the difference, because of the small numbers, we cannot tell, I mean, whether this is just chance. There were no difference by Giardia, which was one of the, you know, not as common as Helicobacter. And they were, in this sample of people, there were no differences. And then I only could do something analytic about H. pylori because I had the numbers. And as has been found before, it's related to education. You know, the more, the less educated, the more likely. So this, let me see if I can show. These are the multivariate binomial logistic regression analysis. So it's twofold for those who are less educated. I dropped many of these that were insignificant. The hand washing, we asked, and there was kind of a Likert scale, like how often do you? And there was were people who saying, well, not always. So I lump the people who said not always. So, and that was the association that we found. And this this was, I think, in the next one. No, that was the only finding for the total coliforms paper. The only factor that we found associated with the presence of coliforms being the outcome in that other report was people reporting that they don't wash their hands every time they go to the toilet. So, and it made sense to me. Like, it seems like that is meaningful. We didn't find an association. Can you go back? We didn't find an association with levels of, no matter how we beat the data set, with the snapshot of counts of a total coliforms or fika coliforms with H. pylori. It's probably the next slide. It's probably not relevant. The snapshot assessment, you know, it doesn't do the trick. We left out blastocystis hominis, which is reported about 14% in children in rural areas near El Paso, though there is controversy whether, you know, how relevant as a pathogen blastocystis hominis. I don't have expertise to go one way or the other. Of course, these people are the people who are asymptomatic. You know, these are healthy adults carrying not necessarily disease with this infection, right? We have learned that these methods, well, they are comparable with other surveys done in Mexico and the U.S. And what we found is lower prevalence of tinea in this part of Mexico. This is lower than in rural areas in Mexico. Of course, it's a surprise. I mean, like, it seems like not because you have been raised in the U.S. And you are still exposed to risk factors for contracting tinea, like going to Mexico or eating produce who is infested with, or having, you know, relatives who maybe, you know, I think this is important, has been already published. We think that in Mexico there is this twice a year mass campaign for eradication of helminths. I mean, it's an anti-helminth campaign with albendazole, which is used around the world. Probably in India they do it the same, but not in these vulnerable populations in the U.S., and that is what we think is worth pursuing. What if we try to eradicate tinea among population at high risk in the U.S., because, you know, many of these people may pass the tinea to somebody and it will become a neurocysticercosis. We think that, well, of course, this is good news for those of us who are working on Helicobacter pylori. This is probably the Mexican Americans, because of their numbers, are the main, the group that represents the main reservoir of Helicobacter pylori, and we need to, next to some Native Americans, and we need to work on that prevention of Helicobacter pylori, because it causes stomach cancer, and we're studying and finding that probably causes iron deficiency. And these are the people who help us. Some of the researchers put their own funding to make it done, but we couldn't done it with a dedicated field personnel. Thank you. I don't know if you have questions for me. I'll be happy to entertain them now or later.
Thank you for your attention and participation. We'll be happy to answer any questions you might have.
The anti-helminth campaign is a... for years now I live in the U.S., but I have a follow-up what they're doing in Mexico. There is a recently published paper by Anna Fleischer, the person who runs that laboratory in Mexico City, Jose Luis Valdespino, I don't remember the name of the journal, but this 2008, and they describe the mass campaigns going on in Mexico to get rid of everything from Ascaridocoides and hookworm and other. It is something that is sponsored by WHO. I mean, it's worldwide effort to get rid of, helminths.
for excellent studies, like for the cross-border population and the binational, you know, study sample. I'm curious, like for this kind of sample, is there any challenge in collect like race ethnicity data and the primary language speaking? Whether this has any influence on the study results?
She's asked if the language has any race ethnicity. Of course, when we're dealing with the population in Mexico, it's Mexican and Spanish speaking, but our population in Imperial County is predominantly Latino, and many are Spanish speaking. We're as high as, we're more than 74% now Latino in Imperial County, and I'm not sure the statistics are for San Diego County. I don't think, Martha, do you?
No, it's not an issue too, we're a lot of stuff there, but
And all of our staff is bilingual who work on the project on this side of the border.
Any other questions? Thank you for attending. We adjourn.
Very good job.
Thank you.
Paula, this is my card, and I'm very glad that I made it to this meeting and hear your presentation.
Nice to meet you. It was very interesting. Latania
was very interesting. I always wanted to do something like using it, but I have never pulled anything like that. It is amazing. I mean, it sounds like, oh, but this is difficult.
So. As you know, working cross-border.
No. It's not an easy task. Even for me, I mean, like, no. It doesn't matter that I'm Mexican.
Thank you very much.
It really means a lot. Hopefully you will get this.
Oh, thanks. We have more work to do. We got the new flu season.
Oh, yeah. Maybe after 1 or 2 weeks, you will have enough.
Yeah, maybe. Thanks. Thank you very much. You're getting a great job facilitating minus one presentation, huh? We managed to fill it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I went to the University of Texas.
Oh, is that right?
At LBJ School.
Oh, great. That's a great school.
There was a piece missing in the lecture that we're at.
Well,
You can ask her to the
San Diego? Yes. I am getting tired to do something on maternal and child health and women's health.
¿Y qué
puedo ayudar a alguien? Me gustaría trabajar con ustedes. Es una cosa que quieren hacer como de entrenamiento, entonces I'm the trainer. Como lo que hicieron en Brownsville y Matamoros, que publicaron en Maternal Health, ahora poco en el, se llama Preventing Chronic Disease.
Es que nuestro programa
infection. I know. But you are in the same office, right? In the same county.
Sí, office of Maternal Health, pero en concreto es vigilancia epidemiológica,
lo que tiene que ver
con pandemia.
Yeah. Pero quizás me puedas dirigir con quién. Está en el mismo lugar. Misión Center.
Lo que le puedes decir,
Okay.
Entiendo que lo que quieren es como entrenar a la gente que trabaja en materno en Child Health en digamos Imperial. Y del otro lado también. O sea, los que están ya a nivel de la enfermera, el médico o el maestro, no, un poquito más arriba, más alto, como el manager o el director del programa de Maternal Child Health o de Women's Health. Sí. Ayudarnos. Bueno, gusto de conocerle. Usted está como coautor de varios de estos trabajos, ¿no? David, sí. Okay, mucho gusto. Ah, okay. Bye.